heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
When we talk about the fabric of our country and our safety and our security and our future, I think you have to bring it back to, a lesson we learned in school. And it really is that old test of time, follow the money. God, everything always comes back to that, doesn't it? I used to hear that as a young kid, follow the money, never really knowing what it meant. But boy, it means plenty today. When you look at commerce and you look at political circles, and more than that, people, when you look at power, pure power. Gotta always follow the money when you're looking at power. It always comes back to that. So this is a two-part series we're doing here. It felt right. The time was right. The selling out of America. I don't say that with any level of enthusiasm or uplift in my voice here. I say it as a pissed off American is what I say it as, the selling out of America, right? I mean, it shouldn't make any of us feel good when we see what's happening. Now, there are multiple levels of this talk that we need to discuss here, okay? I mean, and I'm not, again, it's multifaceted. So bear with me as we peel this here. You heard from Dr. Ron Martinelli up front in part one on this thing, a brilliant analysis he had. Of course, he wrote the book on this Black Lives Matter and the whole war on cops, but that whole Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the selling out our companies and organizations are given out to the Marxist groups. And these are the same people that are burning your cities down and, throwing Molotov cocktails at the police and, acting like they're acting, uncivilized, to say the least, right? Where crime and corruption is breeding. And this all comes under some sort of a guise of equality, they call it, or whatever they want to call it. It's always a mixed conversation. They're always using words of, it means the direct opposite. The socialist progressives are brilliant at that. So even the word progressive, they're really regressive. But they, it's how they package everything. What do they call it? Lipstick on a pig, remember? It's always regressive. That's what they are. I mean, there's nothing progressive about their level of politics. But the whole sellout of that in part one was very important to talk about the level of companies. We gave you multiple examples just to rehash some of that with you. And if you missed that part of it, you want to go back and listen to part one. It is most informative, and you'll get a whole education from that program. And let me bring on Michael Johns now, and we'll begin to peel the onion a little bit more. Interesting story I want to bring to you. But Michael is the national co-founder and leader of the U.S. Tea Party movement. He served previously as a White House speechwriter to President George H.W. Bush. He was a senior aide to a U.S. senator and governor and a policy analyst at the Heritage Foundation. And so Michael joins us now as we talk about this China piece and the global aspect of this. It goes far beyond just China. I mean, there's a lot more to the story. There was an interesting article back in July 2019, Michael, I want to start with. And it was written by Tucker Carlson and Neil Patel. And I pointed out because it had the headline on it, it was, "Is Corporate America Selling Out Our Country?" And it referenced back to the days of Pearl Harbor and President Franklin Roosevelt and summoning heads of American industries to Washington. Companies like Ford, Packard, Chrysler, 3M, General Mills, Pillsbury, Cargill, Boeing, really good American companies, you would think. And that where he called them on it to, would they, not sell out America? And back to the Japanese and what had taken place. And many of them, it was a hard question to answer for many of them. 10 out of 19, including Amazon, Apple, Chevron, General Electric, refused to answer altogether when they were asked, would American companies, a new globalized economy, drop everything for their country? this Daily Caller News Foundation did a whole survey, and these new companies, Amazon, Apple, Chevron, General Electric, refused to answer. And the only two, General Motors and J.P. Morgan and Chase, were willing to clearly identify that they were American companies. So this whole thing, the point of this whole thing about becoming a global environment became out of context, and it was no longer hip to be an American company, it seemed, or at least a lot of these companies weren't admitting it even. And before we start to peel this thing and talk about how our interests have gone overseas, because they surely have. And I think it's important, and it's time now we know who we're doing business with. There are a lot of companies that, like I said, a lot of names. I'm going to give some more names out with this recent scandal with the CCP. But I think we've gotten to the point now where we do need to follow the money. We are selling ourselves out. And I think one of the biggest culprits has got to be at the top of the list, Michael, has got to be China. And you speak about this all the time.
Absolutely.
But are Americans aware of this, though? Are they aware of what's going on? Because I think a lot of companies don't have a clue.
Well, I think the American people have certainly, since the pandemic, put a certain degree of emphasis on China. They hold China, at least to some extent, responsible for this. And if you look at the polling of American citizens' perceptions of countries of the world, it hasn't received a lot of attention, but China has diminished considerably. Now, is it viewed, say, as the Soviet Union was viewed in the height of the Cold War? Maybe not quite that low, but it has fallen considerably. And I think the American people have awoken to the reality that we confront in China no friend, a foe, and engaged in broad range of human rights abuses at home and geostrategic initiatives around the world that are threatening U.S. interests and independent countries, and a very sophisticated and developed global scheme that, frankly, we were really not told the truth about when you go back to it. I was always concerned about China's growth and was always told, really, by the top leaders in Sinology and in Chinese economy, that the growth of the Chinese economy would lead to a liberalization of China and would lead to an assimilation of into the global economy, that we had nothing to fear as China grew. Its middle class would basically emerge, and it would become more friendly toward the U.S. and less contentious. And of course, the exact opposite has happened, and that's one of the biggest geoeconomic stories of the last 30 to 40 years.
Back when Nixon opened up the doors to China, to Red China at that point, it was this concept that they would be an equal playing partner, more or less, Michael. They would play fairly. And we make them part of the world business, the world economy. But what's happened now is the political class have really sold it out. And somehow we've gone wrong from the Nixon days to current, where we find ourselves right now. Something has gone badly wrong, because now you just mentioned the Soviet Union as an example, Michael. You got me thinking with the reference to the Soviet Union. And you think about that a moment here. You said rightfully so, we're not at that point yet, but you know what? We're getting damn well close to that. And I could see just a little bit further when you look at the damage they've done through the whole COVID episode, but you look at what the CCP is doing through our political class with people like Dianne Feinstein and Eric Swalwell and countless others in the Beltway in Washington. Now you see the report of what's happening with U.S. companies that are riddled with these Chinese people. And now you see the infiltration of the stealing of technology and the decimation of our industries here in our country, what Trump has tried to revive and rebuild. And I would say to you, I don't think we're far off, Michael, from looking at China as a threat, just like the Soviet Union was. And you know what else I say? Wait, if you take all what I just said and you combine that with what these people are doing in the South China Seas and how they're posturing with Taiwan and Hong Kong, and you know what? You've got a monster on the loose, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's even more complex than that. I mean, their global economic development programs, the Silk Road Initiative that they've launched, all of these programs that are basically putting many developing nations in a great degree of debt in exchange for Chinese development programs that in turn are giving China strategic leverage over these countries. And they've even, you know, seized some assets of these strategic assets of some of these countries when they haven't been able to make payments on these development projects that, frankly, in many cases, the people really didn't want anyway. But the story of China, I mean, you have to go through it historically. 1949, you know, the communists take power in China for 25 years. We recognized the Republic of China, Taiwan, and had no real, you know, we had very limited interaction with China. And then Nixon's decision in 72 to go to China was as much based on neutralizing the Soviet Union and trying to avoid having, you know, China and the Soviet Union essentially amassed against us. And so it was in a very different geopolitical environment that's now been gone for several decades. And meanwhile, everything we were told about China's development and China's interaction in the world is more or less proven untrue. They've used all these international bodies that they've manipulated for their own interests at our expense. They've gotten away with extraordinary theft of intellectual property. They manipulate their currency routinely, violate trade practices and protocols, fundamentally are dishonest on most things, and have a very ambitious internal plan. They're a very disciplined communist party that operates on five-year plans, and their plan ultimately is designed to supplant the United States as the world's economic leader, the world's military leader, the world's cultural leader. This is an extremely aggressive regime, which would be threatening even if it were not as dangerous and hostile and even evil as it is, but it is all those things on top of it.
Well, China is very effective at playing the long-term game. They do it very well. They play that game really well. Our politicians do not. It's one of the penalties we pay here for to be so open as we are, but to also have it where we play to the next election. The political class does, Michael. You know, they play to the next election constantly, not a long-term strategy. We don't really have a long-term strategy kind of thing in this country to deal with something like this. You know, Mike Pompeo, I don't know if you've seen this, Michael, the Secretary of State, he was asked about this. He had an interesting interview with the Wall Street Journal, by the way, and he was asked what the world needs to do about China. And it was an interesting interchange back and forth. And the Wall Street Journal put the question right out to him. What should the role of U.S. multinational corporations be at this moment? And that actually is a good way to put it, multinational corporations. That is really the globalist movement. And it really is a quandary how to still be, you know, an American might and be an American company, like a lot of these brands I was referencing in that piece that Tucker posted back in 2019. How do you make that leap and still be playing the global environment, but yet still have pride in America and protect, you know, self-interest, you know, here in our country? So Pompeo answers this way. He says, business leaders ought to actively engage in making sure that the rules apply equally, whether that's investment rules applying reciprocally between foreign direct investment here in the U.S. and American companies that want to invest in China, or whether it's the massive human rights violations taking place in China. He says here, I think every business leader who is operating internationally understands that it is important to make sure, number one, that you aren't contributing to massive human rights violations, and two, that you're operating in a way, even if it has a short-term cost to your own business, fundamentally, that you're working towards making sure that the opportunities for freedom-loving nations and for rules-abiding nations to continue to exist, that you aren't helping to underwrite authoritarian regimes that want to take away the very freedoms that have led your company to be successful. But Michael, that's not happening. They are absolutely.
Well, you know, China's it's also an, lunch.
you know?
Yeah, and I like what Pompeo says there, but it's, you know, what's lacking is the specificity. So
that's it.
You know, for instance, you know, you can't expect these companies. The first really big Fortune 500 company I worked in was Eli Lilly and Company. It's based in Indianapolis. It's one of the most iconic pharmaceutical companies in the world. And I can remember once or twice when I got in there, there were various business units, and leaders of those units would say, "Michael, can you go down and, you know, kind of just talk to the group a little bit about Africa or about Asia?" You know, because they'd known that I'd been sort of all over the world, or Latin America. And at first, I found this really bizarre. I go, "These are like highly educated professionals, either in management, bioscientists, PhDs," and I'm like, "I guess so." And I finally kind of, you know, in some of the communication with the CEO, really, it was an eye-opening experience, because, I mean, they had employees that were disproportionately, you know, from Indiana, had grown up in Indiana, hadn't spent much time out of even Indiana, much less out of the United States, and simultaneously their business with the rest of the world was where they saw all of their growth. So there was this period, kind of, you know, I think you would say 70s through the turn of the century at least, where big companies had kind of felt that they had fulfilled their domestic market potential. That wasn't where they saw the growth.
Yeah.
And they saw, I mean, they were, you know, putting together single digit growth domestically, and they could always come up with new products and things like that. But the real growth were these unconquered developing markets, what they called developing markets. And China was once considered, and in some ways is still considered, a developing market, which is extraordinary, even if it's the second largest economy in the world with a $13 trillion GDP.
Yeah, and what is it, 1.4 billion people or something like that, Michael? Who's counting, right?
Yeah.
A couple of hundred million here or there. I mean, think about the size of that compared to where we are. I mean, that's what, one, two, three, four times the growth of, four times the number we have, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we lead in almost every key metric against them. They hate to be reminded of that fact. In fact, they routinely cite PPP, which is purchasing power number that they do lead the world in, but on, you know, it's on a GDP basis, on GDP per capita, on you know, standard of living, on welfare, even for the poor, you know, we're still the world's leader on wages, far and away the world leader. But, you know, we're dealing with an export driven economy that's very aggressive and knows, you know, export markets, has not been afraid to literally steal intellectual property and to recreate products and export those, and which has gained favor, let's face it, with a lot of traditionally U.S.-based companies. Some of those companies that you mentioned are companies that, you know, when you really talk to them and say, well, if you raised in a business meeting, is this good for the United States? I mean, that would be like an unusual question. That's not, they think in terms of their total global sales, their total global profit. And it's led many a company to determine that, you know, if they can fare better and lower their, you know, have a lower operating expense in Asian countries or in China, or if they can obtain more favorable regulatory conditions, which almost certainly is usually the case, they're pretty inclined to want to go do that. That's what we've been confronting. And simultaneously, it doesn't get much attention, but China's been a big force behind the US environmental movement. So all the regulations that we've been, and our regulatory movement, so all of these regulations that have been put into place, many of which President Trump correctly got rid of, were supported by nonprofit advocacy organizations that were operating in the interests of, you know, workers or the environment, but really in the grand global scheme, we're pushing those initiatives in the United States economy, where we probably have the best of environments on those issues, and not at all in China. And to this day, there's very little focus on China, which remains the world's largest polluter, far and away.
So now here we are, and we see this other story early in the week that's about the CCP and the Communist Party, which started, as I referenced earlier, Michael, with Swalwell and other political leaders. But this is beyond politics now. Now we're talking about corporate America. We're talking companies like Boeing, Qualcomm, Pfizer, who just is making mega money with the vaccine business there. Are three companies right there that are employing dozens of CCP members in the Chinese facilities. So there was a leaked database that is being reported that of registered members of the Chinese Communist Party, that and it goes pretty deep now, that has exposed a mass infiltration of American companies with serious national security implications. So this thing, we're only seeing the tip of this thing right now as I'm just reading through some of the information here. But this is where we got, you know, you and I have talked many times about on the university level, you know, the universities, but this is way beyond universities now. So take a look at this. You've got universities, Michael. You've got the political leaders, like I referenced Feinstein, Swalwell, and many others. Now you've got companies in here. That's a trifecta right there, where China is making inroads into stealing, as you mentioned, intellectual property, but they're stealing all kinds of stuff, all of our secrets, technology, and all of this is going overseas. That's been part of the battle here in this new century of why we're struggling probably in the way that we are, and why I think we're losing ground. It won't always be that way. We are at the top of the game here. At some point, China is going to take us over. You know that, right?
I haven't concluded that that's inevitable. I
really
was hopeful, you know, under President Trump's leadership, I thought, you know, those sort of policies would protect our global leadership and would hopefully bring China in line. But, you know, under Biden's leadership, which is going to, you know, essentially remove many of these tariffs, not put much focus on a lot of this intellectual property theft, not put much focus on the currency manipulation, not really view China as a threat, as I think Trump has correctly viewed them. Yeah, they're likely going to gain some ground. But, you know, they also have an extraordinary number of problems on their hands. And, you know, it's difficult because you mentioned the 1.4 billion population. You know, of the 1.4 billion population, mm-hmm. I mean, the Chinese Communist Party is big, but it's a very small percentage of that total number. And so you're dealing with a large number of people who don't feel any real degree of loyalty to that government or to that regime, even if they try to force it upon it. And in fact, you really can look at it much like we looked at the former Soviet Union as a fairly unnaturally aligned country that's held together by force. So if you gave the people of Tibet, for instance, the opportunity to leave China, they almost certainly would do so. If you gave Hong Kong that opportunity, I guarantee you they would do so. And you go through each and every one of these provinces, their loyalty is to their tradition and their history and their people and their culture and their language. And that is very diverse. Now, what China is fully aware of this. So that's one of the reasons that they've been engaged in all of this persecution of these ethnic minorities, and have been designed to force the Mandarin language onto the provinces who haven't spoken it, try to suffocate the history and the culture of these provinces, and hope that over time they can assimilate all these people into one sort of broad body. But it is not that right now by any means. And it's one of the reasons we have, you know, 2 to 3 million Uyghurs in concentration camps in China, which is probably almost certainly the biggest human rights crisis since Pol Pot, or even since the Holocaust.
And nobody talks anymore. You hear basically nothing about human rights when it comes. It's like not even a conversation anymore, guys.
Because we have a conflict, you know, because you see the conflict. You know, when you got you worded it perfectly at the front about the role of money. Money buys silence. Mm-hmm. Money can buy money. Money can buy a voice, and money can buy silence. And so you look at, say, you know, company after company mm-hmm. doesn't have much to say about mm-hmm. the Uyghurs because they know they're going to pay a price for it in their business relationships mm-hmm. with China. It certainly is the case with the National Basketball Association, which does an extraordinary amount of business in China and hasn't had a word to say about it. And even these companies that traditionally are out there talking about social justice and equality and, mm-hmm. you know, diversity, it really has got to ring hollow and hypocritically on those who hear it, because the most egregious violations of those are happening in this very country where they're doing a significant amount of operations.
Yeah.
Uyghurs have even been used in slave labor in the production of a lot of products that have been exported.
And there are a lot of people looking the other way as all that happens on a regular basis. You know, I want to stay at one point a moment. Every expert report I've seen and read has always indicated, and I've been seeing these for years, and I cringe every time I see them, Michael, but they always indicate that it's just a matter of time before China becomes the number one this, the number one that, the number one this. And I always, as an American, as a patriot, of course, it always gives me a gut-wrenching feeling to that point.
So
we don't have 1.4 billion people either.
We don't, but nor do we have, those are positives and burdens. I mean, they've got the burden of a lot of those many tens of millions who oppose that regime that they've got to sort of address. They've got resources that they've got to provide. They have, it's a burden and a curse. And they certainly don't have the level of freedom that I think you typically would attach with developing economies. So what's interesting, and the reason they are a threat is, well, they're obviously run by a communist party and a very serious communist party, and it's a communist party that can operate in very totalitarian ways. They're sort of a hybrid in a way between the communist political ideology and this sort of corporatism that does recognize and seize economic opportunity and tries to make the country appealing to it. Soviet Union was never really particularly successful in that. No countries never really saw the Soviet Union as an emerging market. They never were looking really to do business there. This is a very different economic structure that's been made appealing in a whole bunch of ways. It's just simply not well regulated. Wages are low. But then there's downsides. Like, you can't take a U.S. technology company into China, for instance, without showing them all of the trade secrets associated with it. Any product that you want to manufacture in China, you have to show them how it's made.
They demand it. That's part of the deal.
They demand it. That's a law. Absolutely. And that's because part of their long-term goal is ultimately to supplant these companies, which is one of the many reasons they're very welcoming toward them.
So the whole concept now, everything I see that, this whole vision and idea of bringing China into the world's business and the world's economy has sort of backfired. And I'm seeing more and more. In fact, Pompeo even talked about that in that interesting interchange he had with the Wall Street Journal, talks about the fact that it has backfired. And we just touched on human rights conditions, a little bit of that, but even more so with the what's happening with the spies and all this stuff. Everything is surfacing right now with this whole election squabble we're having here in our country right now. China is at the head of all of this. Isn't it interesting, Michael? You think about it.
Yeah,
of the storm. They're at the center of the storm of every debate we're having here. COVID, the whole election thing, the infiltration of the spies and the CCP. I mean, think about it. It's all China, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, one very credible thesis is that China was really beginning to pay the price with Trump's policies. They were having to back off of their long-term ambitious plans, confront the reality that they might actually not be able to steal their way and cheat their way to the top. And, made a thesis is that they made this decision to let the pandemic loose on the world, mm-hmm. And particularly on the United States, cause this economic harm, even create, kind of these election
I heard that as well. What do you think of that?
Yeah. Well, a whole bunch of things. I mean, number one is you could foresee that the mail-in ballots would be detrimental and would have been historically prone to fraud. But more interesting is the which requires, I think, a lot more reporting, is the $400 million that went into the holding company of Dominion Voting Systems, which is now at the centerpiece of the alleged criminal level electoral fraud. So this foreign company based in Canada, but no one really even knew who owned it. It's still not really even clear who owns it. It's owned by a holding company and their shareholders, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But China is a big part of that. And China is on the, you know, is very engaged in that holding company. So one of the allegations that's out there right now is that China had access to this equipment and to its parts, and there were Chinese parts in Dominion systems, and that they were potentially able to manipulate these votes.
So help me out now. When we look at this whole, what we're trying to do with this this conversation, this two-part series, the selling out of America. So when we talk about the interchange, everybody can see the damage and the horror show that China is right now, and that, in, you know, and really it goes beyond that when it when we talk about a global sellout. As so many reference the selling out of America, what do you think, Michael, from a consumer standpoint? Let's bring it back to consumers now, so we can bring this talk right back to the level of people listening. I'm trying to make people aware at this point of who we're spending our hard-earned money with. That's what this is all about, this whole follow the money sort of thing. I've become more aware of it in my life. I'm very cautious now, and I really have been for a while now. I'm very careful. I'm very cautious where I spend my money. I want to know where it's made. I want to know who's doing business with who before I lay money down. And there are people now I'll drive by or I won't do business with. Like I mentioned a couple of times to listeners about my son with the Nike shoes. And I said, can we not do the Nike, please? I go to get some other American brand like New Balance, or I think they've referenced or something right. else. I don't know, whatever.
New Balance is my sneaker of choice. It's US
made. That's what I understand, right? All right, cool.
Quite comfortable as well.
That's cool because I was just...
that's a non-paid endorsement.
That's right. Tell them to call me later, please. We'll get them on here. Yeah. But I thought so. And I wasn't totally positive of New Balance, but that's what I was told. And so he kind of did that. But so if we're bringing it down to consumers, how do we become more educated as consumers to be able to know we're spending... So we don't want to spend money with companies that are doing business with the Black Lives Matter, Antifa, as we were talking about Dr. Ron Martinelli with, or with companies, or globally, the enemy, like China. What do you think about this concept?
Well, this is something that the progressive left has put a lot of attention on for a long time. And even to this day, I don't think it's something that a lot of conservatives have paid a lot of attention to. They put rhetoric into it. But, you know, we haven't, to my knowledge, really blacklisted ever any company and said that, hey, this is no conservative should buy a product from this company. And, you know, we've had companies that have been engaged in unbelievable offenses against our values and our nation and whatnot. We play by different rules. We are,
By the way, the left blackballs, Michael, the left blackballs, by the way. So they do that regularly. Okay. I just want to get that out there.
And they do it individually, you know, so they'll go after an individual and hope no one else will rise against. They always pick their battles very carefully. But the danger of that and the danger of the, you know, kind of political social culture that we're entering right now is that it also just sends a message to everyone else, which is a message sent in totalitarian societies, which is don't speak up, don't hold any views about the future of your country or the policies that should be adopted. It's a silencing technique ultimately, because when you see individuals who are not only not rewarded for standing up for these values that are at the core of our foundation and the core of our greatness, but are actually punished for holding them, everyone seems to quickly get the message. And we're not filled with a whole bunch of Thomas Paines right now. We got a certain percentage of the country that's out there willing to fight these battles. But for most people, it can be fairly intimidating. And that's another dangerous trend that I'm seeing. I am a real consumer of business media. And whenever the issue of liberal media bias comes up, I say, absolutely. I've known that for 20, 30 years. What's incredible to me now is if you open like the Harvard Business Review or Forbes or Fortune, or Business Week, if you were reading these publications back in like the 80s, you wouldn't recognize them today. I mean, firstly, they used to be focused on innovation and development. They've really taken on this entire sort of progressive cause. That's the centerpiece of it all. Yeah. You might have seen, and it's transformed into business as well. You might see the NASDAQ Stock Exchange. I don't know if you saw that story where they're now going to require NASDAQ companies to have diversity, not just among gender or ethnicity, but among sexual orientation and other ways, or, you know, they're subject to penalty and even removal from the exchange. Now, where do those ideas sort of come from? I mean, because you'd like to see diversity kind of be naturally arising, and not imposed by somebody as a mandate on a company. I believe the answer is, you know, the left is just very active. They get out, they get before these companies, they make it clear what they want, and they make it clear that there's a cost if they don't do what they want. And in exchange for that, they often get what they want. You know, so when they went out and, you know, when BLM, which is now kind of broadly recognized as just an anarchist
Marxist movement.
Marxist, anarchist, hate-driven, yeah. Seems to me, very hateful. They sold a lot of companies on this whole idea. And they went out and did over $1 billion of damage in our cities. Over a dozen Americans were killed in these riots. And none of these companies, to my knowledge, have come out and said, gee, that was a mistake, or we shouldn't have done that, or can we have our money back, or let us contribute to rebuilding the neighborhoods this group destroyed. I mean, they've been just extraordinarily silent on it. And I think the reason why is nobody's demanding it of them, you know? So
that's right.
We have, I think a lot of conservatives sort of think that there's some big body out there that's taking care of these issues and watching them on a day by day basis. And I hate to tell you that the sort of middle-aged reality that I've come to is that I used to think that too. And that's just simply not happening. There's not a lot of bravery, not a lot of boldness, and sensible things that should be happening are not happening. But that would be a good starting point, is these companies should be held accountable for the damage that they did. And if they don't, they should be boycotted.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hell of a starting point there. You know, I mentioned a series of companies, Michael. Let me share with you quickly in part one that are given, well, listen to this, the Financial Times ran a report, $500 million, almost $500 million was put together from these companies like, well, Amazon, Apple, Ben and Jerry's, Away Luggage, Facebook, Nike, YouTube, Twitter, and about 100 different companies. This is all this money went into the BLM and all of that. And that the Financial Times came out with that whole report. And now they're loaded with cash. And now you want to know where all those pallets of ammunition are coming from and everything as they destroy the cities and what have you. Remember, everybody's looking around.
You know, it still doesn't all add. Yeah, I do. So I do get where that came from now. But, yeah, but I hope there's some audits going on there, because that's an extraordinary sum of money. I would really like to know what they've actually done with that. And those companies need to be approached. I mean, as saying, hey, you know, look, you maybe were naive and sort of feeling that this was actually, you know, some sort of civil rights movement, which it sold itself as and clearly isn't. Look at all the damage they've done, they've caused, and take some responsibility for that and don't do it again.
So, but listen, my debate back, my argument, Michael, is then if we're, I think, would you agree with me? We've got to empower Americans. We have to, but like you said, is anybody really watching out, or they think somebody's watching? Nobody's watching out. We see that obviously with the global.
And they know it. That's why they get away with this
exactly,
stuff.
Exactly.
So
brother.
If it's like, so if I have the progressive left in front of me saying we want, like, you know, and I'm Jeff Bezos at Amazon, they're saying I want $10 million. $1 billion, mm-hmm. or we're going to go out of here and we're going to cause immense problems.
Damn
we're
right.
going to launch a boycott of your company. Mm-hmm. And they sit around for about 5 minutes, have a meeting, go, that boycott's going to cost us $100 million, cut the check tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And we're not in there at all. We're not only are we not, you know, seeking neutrality, we're not, you know, condemning them for putting the $10 million in, we're not alerting them to the damage that they're done. And, you know, to my knowledge, I don't think any of these companies have come out and really with much in the way of condemnation for the damage that they contributed to, that they financed, you know? So, I mean, we've gotten to a point where this is street terrorism. These companies have been financiers of street terrorism.
That's exactly.
It's never quite worded that way, but I think it's indisputable.
And there's no accountability is what your argument is right there, right?
Not, well, there should be, but we don't. We just don't have a movement that is seems designed to do that. So, you know, I mean, I go through these companies and who's meeting with them? You know, DoorDash, $500,000, Deckers, Amazon, $10 million.
Oh, you got Microsoft, a whole list there too, huh? You got a whole list.
Microsoft,
there.
Glossier, 23andMe, the biotech mm-hmm. gene company, yep. Airbnb, Unilever, Bungie, Nabisco.
A lot of them.
These are big companies. Dropbox, Love and Republic Traded, Fitbit.
So I think part of the game here then, or the game plan should be, is to, if we're going to level the playing field, is to make Americans aware of who these companies are. But it's also, my argument, Michael, is if we can give an alternative. So how do we empower Americans is the point of this, or back to the selling out of America, because it's going to continue. A lot of this, what we're talking about, this two-part series is going to end up being the demise. I mean, it's one thing to sit and talk about staying our political circles and throw firebombs at each other all day. It's another thing to, as you always say, Michael, is, and I love that about you when you always say, well, how do we create a movement? And you see, you understand the power of we the people. You totally get that, man. And you say, well, Absolutely. How do we create a movement? You did that with the Tea Party. So you always say, well, how do we create a movement? How do we get people involved? How do we get them engaged? How do we take the power back? That's really what we're talking about, right?
Yep. Yeah, and it never crossed my mind to go in and demand $10 million from Amazon, even though they would have been actual beneficiaries of the low tax policies that we were proposing. I don't see how they benefited whatsoever here, aside from the fact that you know, they avoided the boycott. I did when you first mentioned this segment, was reminded of an initiative I took back in 2009 with a few mm-hmm. Tea Party colleagues of mine, some of whom have gone on to do some pretty big things. But John McKay was a Whole Foods CEO at the time and had written what I thought was a very well thought out, creative, constructive Wall Street Journal op-ed opposing Obamacare and putting forward alternatives on how companies can go about providing health insurance, small companies too, for their employees. And the left went crazy and launched this entire boycott of Whole Foods. And we gathered a group of national Tea Party leaders together and launched a boycott of Whole Foods, encouraging our members to actually go
and shop at Michael, Whole Foods. A boycott, huh?
Yeah.
A boycott. Huh? Yeah, that's cool, man. And worked? It worked?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, it was sensitive because I think once we got into the political dimension of it, they were just trying to contain the damage. The last thing they were going to do is
I like it, though.
Publicly thank us for what we did. But I think we minimized a lot of the damage that would have been done on Whole Foods as a result of that. The issues come and gone. But sadly, I mean, we want, you know, we want these CEOs speaking out. We want to hear their policy mm-hmm. visions. These are some of the smartest people that we have to offer. Why would we penalize or seek retribution against someone who came out with a position on this either way? I mean, there should be freedom of thought and freedom of thinking. And then once upon a time, those were really valued traits in an employee.
Amen, buddy. Amen. You listen there to Michael Johns, and God, what a great two-part program to have Dr. Ron Martinelli and Michael Johns on and kind of tear this thing apart here. But listen, I'm going to take a pause. I love this boycott thing. Keep that right in your mind, and we'll pick it up on the other side of the pause here.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world, featuring some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
So we're talking about the selling out of America. And as I always say, follow the money. There's been a two-part series here as we try to peel this thing and talk about empowering Americans again. And we're all seeing the decimation of business throughout our country for a lot of reasons. We pointed out to you some of the political reasons, some of the COVID reasons, and some of the global reasons. But the real equal, the point of equality on all of this conversation is, what's the answer? How do we empower people to know where they're spending their money? And that was the whole thing when I said, let's do this two-part series. Part of it was to shine a light back on, you know, what are some of the things we can do as Americans? And what are the problems? It's one thing to sit and talk about the problems all day. It's another thing to talk about what are the answers. Michael mentioned, interestingly enough, about a boycott. That I had not really heard that in the way of how he said it. He has a lot of history back through the Tea Party and all that he had done. When he talks about a boycott, he's talking about encouraging people to do business with those companies that you want to do business with. So, for instance, instead of just a boycott, but a boycott, which is far more interesting. Let me bring on here a couple of the gentlemen you met in part one, and I want to introduce you back to them again. So if you missed that part one, you need to go hear that again here. But the first gentleman is Ken Manny is here. He's a CPA from New York City, resides now in Pennsylvania. One of the founders of the company and the concept and the organization I made you all aware of in part one, shoptotheright.com. Ken, when this idea happened, first of all, this kind of a nationwide database and an undertaking is no small task. When you set out to do this initially, I mean, to the level of what you're planning to do, has this been done before? Is there such a thing like this? I haven't heard of it, if there is. And two, as we started in the beginning, what is the whole concept? How does this bridge to the conversation we just had with Michael when we talked about trying to empower consumers to know even if you're spending it overseas, in the case of China, for instance?
Michael and Malcolm, that was a really excellent, informative discussion. So has it been done before? I would say yes, it has been done many, many times by the left. I think they call it Tuesday. But we on the right have not done this before. It is an undertaking. It is a big job. It's a necessary undertaking. This is what we need to do. This point in time, our government is not protecting America's interest and Americans' interest and our working interest. We need to do it for them. We need to step in place and say, we're going to only support companies who support America. You know, something that Michael said, you know, companies are, you know, hurt and punished for supporting America now. And we really need to make sure that that doesn't happen or there's not going to be much left. And any company that's willing to get on our site, and which is called Shop to the Right, is actually exhibiting bravery in the face of boycotts, and we should boycott.
Ken, you bring up a really, really terrific, valid point, Ken, because what happened is you're penalized for, and that's kind of been that way. It's been building for some years where you're being penalized to be proud to even be an American today, or in other words, to even love the flag. It's like you're being penalized for that as well. And it was interesting. You know, you also, you're astute to, I'd mentioned, I believe it was to Michael or maybe it was to Ron. I don't recall, but I think I mentioned to him that the left does have a habit of doing that. They have called out the right many times. When they tend not to get their way, they do exactly that. And they'll even, in fact, I'll go one step further, Ken. They'll even dox you on the right if you don't agree with them. I mean, again, they don't believe in constitutional rights. They'll dox you. They'll take you and drag you right through the mud. It's kind of the way the left operates, isn't it?
It sure is. Not only will they dox you, they have elected officials that want to keep lists of Americans who support views that they don't completely agree with.
I mean, that sounds like Nazi Germany, doesn't it?
Or the Democratic Party today in America, but yes.
Or the Democratic Party today in America. I can't say it any better than that, buddy. I'm chuckling, but it is not. It's pretty obvious. It's pretty sick what we're dealing with here. Ken, the concept now of Shop to the Right, when people go, they can go there. What they list the business, you mentioned in the part one, they list the business. It's a free listing. And the idea is they become part of a database. That's the concept?
Yes, it's a directory where all companies support America just by the very fact that they sign up for our database. They are committing and saying out loud, we support America and American values. And at Shop to the Right, we believe that all shoppers should use their financial power and control to support America and American companies.
All right, let me bring on here also Alan Weider, and he was on with us in the first part. You may remember, he's a sales, market, and real estate guy, and one of the founders here, more so, of Shop to the Right. Alan, are you worried about getting any kickback? Are you worried about getting any pushback? Because back to what Ken was just saying about the American being proudful, or at least putting your money with American values. Are you worried about the pushback from the left at all?
We know it's coming. We welcome it. We hope the American spirit, and we know the American spirit is stronger. But we do understand that the left is very powerful and very vocal as well. And we are seeing, unfortunately, company after company bend under the pressure of the left and given to their demands. And it's a shame. And it is really destroying our country. So we know what's coming. We understand that there's a lot of noise out there, but we know and we hope that the other companies that are not afraid to speak their mind and not afraid to stand up for our American values will stand up and will hold hands and be strong and come out and say, no, these are our values. We're not afraid of you boycotting us. The boycott is a great idea. We're going to stand behind what we believe, and that we believe that the American consumer is going to stand behind those companies and shift their allegiance. There's enough coffee shops out there that you can switch your coffee. You can switch your brand of shoe, like you mentioned. We're not here to get people to spend more money or really reinvent the wheel on how they shop. We just want people to be conscious of where they're spending their money, where that money's going. And
that's
and
the
what
concept
that
of it. Yeah. Now, when you say you welcome that, that's pretty brazen. I'm impressed, I think, almost, that you say you actually welcome that. You kind of like you look forward to it almost. Do you really? Or are you just saying that?
Well, we don't. We're not here to start a fight, obviously. But we
no, but they're
going to
fight you. They're going to fight with you. Yeah. And I'm saying the point is you either run the other way or do what most of the right does. They acquiesce to the left. Or do you really welcome it?
That's the point. We're here to stay. We're here to stand up for what we believe in. And we're going to We start the fire, we're going to take the heat.
You start the fire, take the heat. Ken, what do you think about that point with the left? I mean, it sounds to me like in listening to you, in listening to Alan, and the whole concept of what you're doing to shop to the right, you're sort of, it sounds like you're kind of are taking on the fight, and you are kind of bringing it to them, aren't you? You're not worried about it, are you?
If we don't stand up then to a bully, then the bully's going to run us over. Of course, we're somewhat concerned. But more concerning than standing up to the left is doing nothing. That's the most concerning. The most concerning is if we let them run us over, there'll be no fight. At least at this point, we're still armed citizenry. We're the silent majority, but we're still a majority. And we need to stand up now, or there's not going to be much to stand up for.
Yeah, that is interesting. And I've been seeing a lot of telltale signs to what Ken says there. Really, that just echoes in my mind, because I see people saying that now, like they think things are at such a turning point in our country that they say like, well, it is now or never. It is, do or die. And I'm just getting that from different era. Are you feeling that out there as well? Because I'm hearing it from different walks of life, that people think like this is a line in the sand and something sort of has to happen. And that's where I think the left is so brilliant, is they've used the English language in a way that nobody has before. And they use it in a way, and the bigger problem is the media is right along the side of them, and the media does it as well. And they just push that out there. It's a constant drumbeat. It's really a war against America. It's a drumbeat, sure, but it's the sound of war drums. You can hear them in the echo of the distance. Bing 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 bing. You can just hear it in the distance, people. It's really the war drums to take America the hell down, don't you think? I mean, what more is it going to take for people to wake up? I mean, these are simple, fundamental things. And the power is always with we the people. It's always going to be that way. And as soon as you roll over and you play dead, guess what? You are dead. So when we talk about the selling out of America, I think it is important now that we know what we're doing, whatever that means for you in your life. I don't know what it's going to mean. But let's all be conscientious. Where do we spend our money? And, you know, let's hit them right with the wallet. But it's just like in the technology world with Facebook and Google and all these social media empires. I mean, they're destroying us. I mean, they're censoring the hell out of us, just like the media is. It's no different. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. It's something I deal with all the time here at America Out Loud. It's ridiculous what's going on here. It is the selling out of America. And it is about time we start to follow the money. So I suggest to you, my fellow Americans, we begin to do that starting now. If you haven't done it already, please consider wherever it is you're going to take your wallet out next or your pocketbook, where you spend it next, please. Let's all start to do that and put pride back in America, back to the days where Made in America meant something. Yes, we'll still deal globally with companies. We're not talking about isolating and building 100-foot walls on our borders. It's not what I'm talking about at all. Yes, but let's at least qualify to know who they are. Let's do business with those that matter. We do a lot of business with Mexico. We do a lot of business with Europe and the UK. Absolutely. And we should continue to. Not saying we don't. Not a xenophobe here at all. Love the world. Love these countries. That's what this should all be about. And then we can talk about the global world and to live in and what it is. I'm cool with that. But let's make sure America has a stake in the ground. Let's just make sure we're here to put up the fight. And we're not selling ourselves out to Marxists and communists. I think it starts here, people. It starts with you and I to make a difference. Thank you again, as always, for being with me, being part of the journey here. Don't forget, follow the money. It's time to get involved and get loud.